And this is KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday morning. It's July 30th. 64 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. We've got 63 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back as we go throughout your Thursday. Look for lots of sunshine out there. Temperatures climbing into the upper 80s in Park City for your Thursday afternoon. We'll see mostly sunny skies with highs in the mid-90s in the Heber Valley. Things are overall drying out now and will continue for the rest of the day and right on through the weekend. In fact, your Friday calls for plenty of sunshine, but that heat dome will be definitely getting much closer to the area. So high temperatures in Park City will return to the lower 90s. We'll see those highs in the upper 90s to near 100 in the Heber Valley. Now, as we get into the weekend, the heat dome will be in place right over Utah. That is going to bring us the core of this next heat wave moving our way. That means high temperatures in Park City. How about the mid-90s expected for your Saturday and Sunday? Meanwhile, the Heber Valley, we're talking about temperatures between 100 and 105 for your Saturday and Sunday afternoon. So make sure you're staying hydrated. We do have heat alerts that are in effect for parts of the area, and that means that we are talking about some dangerous heat. So you got to stay hydrated. Wear loose-fitting, lightweight colors. Clothing as well, and also make sure that you're checking on your friends and neighbors. If you notice any signs of heat illness, make sure that you get them down and cool down, or you get them to seek some medical attention immediately. Otherwise, heading into early next week, we stay hot to kick off the week. Highs will be in the low 90s in Park City on Monday, near 100 degrees in the Heber Valley with lots of sunshine, and it really stays hot heading into next week as well. Sunshine, temperatures will still be in the low to mid 90s for highs for your Tuesday and Wednesday for Park City, and we'll see those high temperatures right around 100 degrees in the Heber Valley for your Tuesday and Wednesday with lots of sunshine across the area. It all looks hot and dry across the area through most of next week. We'll watch out for a critical fire danger threat by the time we get towards your Sunday and Monday returning. Maybe some moisture returning, though, by the second week of August. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back on ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, I'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Megan McKenna, recapping yesterday's meeting. From Heber City, Public Information Officer Ryan Bonnell with details on how to apply for the Heber City Leadership Academy. And from the Park City Summit County Arts Council, Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder calling in, talking about some of their upcoming events, including this month's gallery stroll. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include acclaimed author Miriam Horn, who talks about the story behind one of the most influential scientists you've probably never heard of, wildlife biologist George Schaller. Then behind every data point is a person. Landon Gibb shares how smarter technology is helping caregivers make better decisions for nursing home residents. That's Cool Science Radio, happening every Thursday, of course, from 9 to 10. Taking a look now at some local news. Damon Enman's parents say they feel some comfort now that Summit County has officially charged a man with his murder. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the man accused in the stabbing is now being held without bail.
Prosecutors officially charged 38-year-old Austin Kenneth Garceau with first-degree murder Wednesday in connection with the stabbing death of 34-year-old Damon Enman. Enman's mom, Heather Thorstenson, said she and her husband, Jim Thorstenson, were shocked to hear of their son's death. But they feel some comfort now Garceau has been charged.
I feel better knowing that he's been arrested, that there are consequences to our actions.
The Thorstensons said Enman was heading to Park City July 24th to hang out with friends. One of them had rented a house in the 500 block of Deer Valley Drive. Enman called 911 from the home around 8:30 a.m. According to charging documents, Enman stated Austin had stabbed him. Later in the call, male voices could be heard repeatedly yelling, "Austin, stop." Park City police officers later identified the man as Garceau. Charging documents say three other people were in the home during the stabbing. They told police Garceau called Enman a reptilian before stabbing him. Enman was taken to a Salt Lake hospital where he died from his injuries. New charging documents say a preliminary medical exam found he was stabbed more than 10 times. Jim Thorstenson said the media reports of his son's death have been overwhelming.
I was watching a news article just the other day, and I was like, this is a tragic story. And then I had to like kind of remind myself that, wait, this is our story.
The parents said they also feel for Garceau, his family, and the witnesses.
We've never had any anger about it. It's just been sadness. We don't know for sure, but it sounds like maybe Austin was, there were drugs involved. I don't know. I just feel sad for him. I feel sad that he made a decision to do something that affected everyone's lives.
The Thorstensons said their son had struggled with addiction for years and recently graduated from a recovery program.
We've been just amazed and so proud of all the hard work he's put in. He's been clean and testing clean and just doing a really good job of getting his life on track.
Since Enman's death, the parents said they've received an outpouring of love and support. Dozens of friends have posted tributes to Enman on social media. Many call Enman by his nickname, Day, and reference his infectious smile. Jim Thorstensen said it's clear their son had a positive impact on many people.
He had this ability to make people feel special and feel heard, because he would genuinely listen to people and hear them and make them feel special.
Court records show Garceau's first court appearance is July 30th at noon. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
In the studio now with a recap of yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Councilmember Megan McKenna. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Nice to see you.
Yeah, thanks. You too. Let's see. Starting with People's Health Clinic, they gave the council a summary of its services and community impact. So maybe, what's the situation here? I mean, it sounds like they want more space. Are they losing space? Just bring us up to speed here.
Yeah, sure. We got an update from Dr. Lining yesterday, and they do need space. The People's Health Clinic wanted to come talk to the council and just raise awareness of what they're doing and their needs, and they are asking for more space. They're not losing space. I think the conversation started because they were aware that the health department was doing some shuffling around with the new peak building opening up, and so some people from the health department will be moving over there, and so that's where this conversation started.
Okay, so does giving People's Health Clinic more space require negotiating a new lease, or is it just a matter of kind of reshuffling the office and clinical space?
You know, I'm not really sure yet what it will entail. I think this is just the starting conversation. You know, as we mentioned yesterday in the meeting, this really isn't something in the, you know, scope of the council. This is really more a staff and management level decision. But I think they wanted to bring it to our attention. And so certainly there will be conversations going forward. I think with the county, it will be with Intermountain Health and continuing with People's Health Clinic. I think, you know, both are invaluable organizations to the community that share a space. I think anytime you share space, there's going to be challenges, and both have needs, as we mentioned last night. And so that's something that the county will continue to try to support the People's Health Clinic the best they can, but also not impact the health department.
Yeah, I noticed one of the slides in the presentation talked about how the county does support affordable housing, the county does subsidize transportation. How can they also support healthcare? And this would be a good example of it here with the People's Health Clinic.
Oh, absolutely, and I think we do. You know, I'm able to serve on the Board of Health and the Behavioral Health Executive Committee, so I've gotten to see firsthand really what the health department does, and I think absolutely they work with all of our community partners, and in particular with People's Health Clinic sharing the building there. And so I think that will be a, you know, continuing conversation of how they can best work together. But I think we all appreciate what the People's Health Clinic does and what they mean to our community. And as they shared last night, the growing need is certainly a concern.
Yeah. So I guess how is it what the People's Health Clinic do that's different than what the health department is doing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think that's something that is often missed. I think, you know, you maybe think of public health as just providing clinical services, but that's a small part of what they do. You know, public health provides also behavioral health services, early intervention, environmental health, epidemiology, health promotion and prevention. I mean, the work they do in our school districts with education is tremendous. Public health emergency preparedness, our sustainability team is within the health department. WIC, Women, Infant, and Childhood Services are within the health department. So they do quite a bit. There's a really great documentary on PBS about public health. It's called The Invisible Shield. And I think the title, you know, describes public health right there. There's so much that they do that we don't see, you know, that happens behind the scenes. And it's hard to compare. I mean, really, I think in this case, it is kind of an apples and oranges comparing, you know, the services provided. There's certainly a lot of overlap and shared services that the two provide. But I think they do play different roles in the community. And that's something that, you know, of course, we need to consider.
Mm-hmm. We also heard from Summit County Manager Shane Scott earlier this week that the county does need to provide some space for Jackie's recovery. This is a mental health provider that is using space in the Richens building. And because the Richens building is going away, Jackie's recovery would need something. So is the county obligated to help this other nonprofit out as well?
Yeah, we do have an agreement. Most people are probably more familiar with the Latino Behavioral Health. That was the former name of Jackie's Recovery. And so that's part of that whole shuffle with Richens going away, finding a space for them. And that's certainly part of the conversation.
All right. Well, this kind of feels like the whole Recycle Utah negotiating for space with the county. But in other areas around the county, waste management, healthcare are managed by government and not nonprofits. So how did we get to the point where nonprofits are now filling kind of government's role?
That's a really good question, and I think that's something that we're always trying to balance. And I really think of it more as partnerships, you know, with the county, with our local government in general, with our nonprofits. And when we see them, you know, serving a different role, really, that enables the health department to do more. The People's Health Clinic does so much supporting our uninsured in the county that enables the health department to support other areas, you know, maybe the more underinsured population. And so really I see it more as a partnership, and I do, you know, that it is the county's building, and so that was one way that we've been able to support them. But I think this you know, discussion will just have to continue as the need grows. As Dr. Lining pointed out, the wealth gap continues to widen in this community, and all of those issues that you mentioned are a result of that, and things that we're trying to address across the county.
All right, moving on. The county hired consultants to plan the future of senior services. The full report is in progress, but the consultants gave the council an update yesterday. Basically, we're planning for the silver tsunami. I mean, this is just the growing number of older residents increasing as the population, you know, goes forward.
That's right.
So that's the plan, is to make sure that we're accommodating the residents' needs going forward?
Yeah, senior services is something that the county has always provided, and just as you mentioned, with the changing demographics, and, you know, one of the questions I asked the Hill Group last night is, you know, how is Summit County similar, and how are we different from other communities that they've served, and they mentioned exactly that we're seeing this shift nationally. It just seems to be happening faster and more pronounced here in Summit County, and because of that wealth gap. So I think this is something we were planning to do anyway, but that will be really helpful moving forward with our senior services and challenges today.
So is the thinking here that we're going to need more senior centers or just more programming at our three centers?
I think probably more programming at the centers and probably more services in addition to programming. You know, some of the findings they pointed out already is just connecting seniors to the services. So better communication, transportation seems to be a big one, especially in our more rural communities. Aging in place, assisted living, all of those are definitely themes that we've seen. I'll actually be participating this afternoon in a strategic plan, actually one of the first strategic planning events in South Summit. So we'll take what they've found so far and start putting it together into this plan.
It was interesting to see the staff report that says some people don't participate in senior services or programming since they don't identify with the label senior. And I know a few of these folks. What kind of rebranding might help with that?
Yeah, that's something I've heard too. I've gotten to go to a lot of these events. I am one of our senior services liaison with Councilmember Hansen, and so we've attended quite a few of these, and yeah, have heard similar things. I think what they mention in other communities, maybe a change in the name and kind of a rebranding of the old senior center idea that a lot of people have.
Okay, and then what kind of budget does the county have for any expanded services or programming? I mean, at this point, we haven't seen a whole lot of support from Summit County with regard to the moving and rebuilding of the Park City Senior Center.
Yeah, I think, you know, that was really hinged on this plan. We've been waiting for this to come out for exactly that reason. I think this plan will help give us a better idea of how to allocate those funds and what kind of budget we should anticipate going forward. So I think we'll have a much better idea and be able to share that with Park City Senior Center too.
Okay. The developer of the Wakara project and County Council agreed to move forward with the Camas Gun Club Road to alleviate traffic for residents near Camas. There's been substantial construction across the Wasatch County border in the Tuhay area. So can you kind of sketch out where the road to the gun club will connect to SR 248?
Yeah, so if you're familiar with the Gun Club Road or 200 South, this is a road that now with this agreement, and this is, as you mentioned, this has been a long time coming and a lot of back and forth, and thanks to our county attorney, Ryan Stack, for all of his work with the partners on this. But it's essentially just an alternative route. We would end up abandoning a portion of that 200 South, and this new road that they would construct would cut through the property that we just purchased. And so actually it's really a win-win. It's really exciting that we were able to come to this point. I think residents and both counties are really happy with the agreement we were able to come up with. So it'll cut through there, and it'll actually end up creating a more continuous open space when we revegetate that old road.
Okay, so you have heard from residents in that area, and they're okay with the solution here?
Yeah, we got a lot of feedback throughout the process from local residents, and that was really important to us. We really wanted to find something that worked for the residents there. They were having a lot of challenges with the construction traffic, as you mentioned, and so I think this is really the best situation for all parties.
Okay, let's see. Just so people know that this road will be built by the developer, mm-hmm. and maintained by the developer. Basically, I think Summit County is going to do that and then just bill
yeah,
them.
we'll actually maintain the road, but then we'll bill the developer for the services.
All right.
That's right.
Let's see. The council also talked about a new rezoning process for the Snyderville Basin Code. Some county leaders think that there are misconceptions about this. What do you think that people don't understand about what's being proposed here?
Yeah, I think there are, you know, a lot of concerns. I think just the name rezone in and of itself is startling, you know, I think to a lot of residents. We've heard a lot of alarm around that. And so I think our community development director, Peter Barnes, did a really good job introducing the ordinance. They've gotten a lot of feedback as well as the council. And so I think he tried to address that to start. And I think the main misconception is that this is, you know, something that will make it easier or a rubber stamp for developers. And as he pointed out, this really is not that all developers going through a rezone application will still have to abide by the, you know, all of the same requirements. It's really just the process that's changing here. And the idea behind changing this process is to really save time, and as we know, time is money. And if we really want to address affordability, that's the best way that we can do it. If we can save time, we can really better hit the affordability and deeper affordability in these projects. What often happens in these rezone applications and the way it's currently set up is you have to submit these very detailed engineering drawings at the very beginning. And so before the developer even gets to know if they can get a rezone or not, they have to spend quite a bit of time and money, and in addition to county staff. And so this is something that the county is certainly mindful of too, is our time that we put into this process. And so really this will allow for a concept development plan. And so that another misconception is that this is, you know, a sketch or a preliminary idea. And this is really something that a developer would still have to present and evaluate the density, the land use, the configuration, the open space, the infrastructure feasibility, all of that stuff would have to be part of this conceptual plan. It's really just the order of this more high-level plans and engineering design that would take place later on.
I've kind of always seen this as a kind of a growth management tool, right? I mean, you don't make it so easy for developers to get what they want, but it also would provide the county some sort of leverage to negotiate here. So, I mean, if we're making it easy for them, are we losing that advantage?
Yeah, I think that's another one of the misconceptions that we're trying to address. And I think you're exactly right. I think that's how it's been used in the past. And I think that's been a challenge for us in really getting the kind of responsible development that we would like to see. And so this is really a tool. You know, I was just looking back recently at our county strategic plan, the visioning process that we went through. And in 2003, we put together this plan. And to address the affordability, there were different strategies and kind of streamlining that process is really how we can hit affordability. This does not mean you get a yes or you know a no. It's just saying that the yes or the no is going to come earlier in the process. So we still have the same legislative ability that we do currently. It would just happen earlier. And so if we say no to a project, the developer knows that density or that open space configuration, that rezone is not going to work there before they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay.
And we'd like to see that more into the affordability part of the project.
All right. This does come back for a public hearing in August. Is that when you expect the council would vote on it?
Possibly. It's always dependent. I think we have more discussion to go, and of course we'd like to hear from the public on this one. And so it will likely be discussion and possible approval.
Okay, real quick, I just wanted to ask, the council had also given Basin Recreation the proposed impact fees, the okay. These are fees that new development pays to offset their impact. Are there limitations in how these impact fees can be used? Are they?
Yeah, it's all in accordance to, you know, state law, and their impact fee facilities plan met the with Zions Public Finance finds them in compliance with the Utah Impact Fee Act. So it is a, you know, impact fees are high in our community, and I think that's again another tool that we use to address some of these impacts we have from growth.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I would love to mention, actually, just last week I had the opportunity to attend the National Association of Counties annual conference. I was the only one from Summit County, but 14 out of 29 Utah counties represented. I serve on the Policy Steering Committee for Human Services and Education. And one thing that really inspired me is our new president-elect, George Dunlap of North Carolina. He launched his initiative for the year, and his idea is to build better futures. And he's calling out all counties to examine how they support young and working people in their counties. And so that's something I'll certainly be thinking about this next year and through the rest of my term, especially as it relates to housing and affordability.
Okay, Megan McKenna, Summit County Council Member, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
Heber City Leadership Academy is accepting applications for the next round of the Academy. And on the phone with details, I have Heber City spokesman Ryan Bunnell. Good morning, Ryan. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So first, tell us about Heber City's Leadership Academy. I mean, what is it?
The Heber City Leadership Academy, this is a program. It's a class. We actually call them graduating classes when you make it through it. We have a series of weeks where there are presentations that help citizens to understand what their municipality does for them. These are the different departments, the different services. A graduate of Heber Leadership Academy will walk away with a greater understanding of how municipalities work, how they differ from counties, how tax dollars are distributed, and, you know, just a greater understanding of government in your community.
All right. So tell us why the city decided to create the program.
You know, I've sat in on many, many city council meetings at this point. It became apparent at some point that there's often a lack of understanding. Case in point, many times people show up for public comment and their grievance might be with a different municipality, or maybe it's the county. And Heber City Council has to say that. And that's kind of a waste of time for everybody, right? Mm. We started Heber Leadership Academy to help citizens become more active, more understanding. You get to go through a series of weeks where right now one of the hot topics would be water, right? Mm. You might be able to sit down with the director of public works who could explain, where does our culinary water come from? What is the status of the Heber aquifer? What is the difference between well water, culinary water, and runoff? And how does that affect irrigation? What is pressurized irrigation? Does my neighbor have pressurized irrigation? Or if I don't, when will it be coming? And these are all questions that you could, straight from the director of public works, learn about. Same thing would go with our power, opportunities to meet with Heber Light and Power. How does that differ from Rocky Mountain Power? Where does our power come from? How is power bought and sold? Any number of elements about how a municipality works. We also go through elements of what it is to be a leader. In this particular upcoming session, we have representatives from the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, the Olympic Committee. We have leadership training set up from spokespeople, influential people in the community. So the end product, not only do you become more informed about local politics, local issues, about how things work, but you also come away with some leadership training. So ideally, a graduate might, you know, a perfect candidate for this program might be somebody that's considering putting their hat in the ring for an election. A graduate of Heber Leadership Academy would come out far more equipped to sit in a council chair than someone who has not. So this was the impetus behind the project. We want more citizen involvement, and we want meaningful interaction with our citizens. And I think it's very arguable that should you go through this program, you will come out with a better understanding of your community, the politics, how things work, and what is the actual situation that's going on in the community.
All right, so applications are now open. Who is eligible to apply?
Well, anyone's eligible to apply. We have a deadline coming up for applications on August 17th. The application is available online on envisionheber.com/Heber Leadership Academy. I think beyond anybody that's just running for office, personally, I'll level with you, Leslie. When I started out in the municipal, in the public sector, and I accepted some of this work, I probably had a bit of a tinfoil hat on. I had some conspiracies about what was going on in our community. What I learned by getting involved was that it wasn't the way that I thought it was. I actually met the people. I learned about the politics. I learned about the rules. I learned how things work. That way, when I have feedback, it's usually a bit more meaningful. So I think even the average citizen, if you're interested in local politics at all, if you are weary of misinformation, of other people's opinions that you're reading perhaps on social forums, and you want to learn for yourself, you want to be a critical thinker, you want to be informed, I think you're a good candidate for this product.
All right. So who chooses the final candidates?
There are a number of seats. I can tell you that we do have seats open right now, but ultimately the applications go under review by city staff. In most cases, I would say that I haven't known too many people to be declined because this is something that we really want. We want an active citizen base and citizens that can contribute to the process of local government. I don't think that you're going to get hazed too heavily if you apply, but we do want, that's a big goal of staff, is that we really want our community to become more active citizens as opposed to, being passive residents.
All right. So basically, if you apply, you'll get in. There's no limit on the number of applicants you'll take.
Well, the seats are limited, but I wouldn't want you to feel like you shouldn't apply because the screening process would be too judicious. Mm. Everybody is welcome. You don't need to be running for office. You just have to have a passion about the community and a desire to learn.
Okay. There is a cost to the program, unlike the Park City Leadership Program, which is basically free.
Yes, there is.
How much?
Geez, Leslie, I didn't come prepared with that one. You got me on that one. I think it's a, let's check the website. Is that fair?
Sure.
I have a number in my mind's eye, but I'd hate to be on public record saying the wrong one.
I was thinking it was a couple hundred, closer to about 300. Let me see. 275.
That's exactly what I,
okay.
That's, it's 275. In that neighborhood. Absolutely.
Yeah, I just pulled that up. And then it's 275, but if you're a member of the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce, you'll get a $50 discount. So that's good to know.
Correct. Yes. So if you're an active chamber member, you do get that discount. And we do thank our tourism office for that generosity. As a business owner, that's another great angle. This is such an excellent opportunity to have an understanding of how the municipality works. Most business owners have stake in the community. It's just a fantastic program.
All right. Let's see. The program runs, let me see. Applications are due by August 17th, and it looks like the program starts August 20th?
Yeah. Yeah, we are making this as accessible as we can because we do believe that it is a very important program. So, yeah, I don't want to create a lack of urgency. We'd love for you to sign up as quickly as possible, and seats will fill. We're aiming, there are around, our target is, to have about 25. That's our goal. And if it went over or under, we could probably work that out. That limiting factor comes down to the meeting rooms and how many seats we have available in those meeting rooms. But I would say enroll today. Make sure you secure that spot, and that you're, you know, you're next in line for the next and up and coming graduating class.
Okay. How much time should participants expect to commit to the program? Because it runs August through, I think, May is what I'm reading here.
Right. So the average meeting usually starts, they're about 4 hours. So you need to block out the better part of that morning. It goes through lunch. Typically there will be an average meeting would have, several different speakers, talking about, you know, several different topics, and oftentimes a lunch. So, they go to different sites. You know, my wife did this course a couple of years ago. She got to operate a backhoe, which was pretty cool. That was the day of Public Works. So you do need to block out some time, but the activities I think are worth it. You know, you'll get to go through the airport, learn. There's so many different variables. It's very hands-on. It's interactive, different locations. I think most people will be surprised to learn how many things are actually going on within the municipality of Heber City.
Okay. Actually, it is one Thursday a month between 12 and 4 p.m. Lunch is provided. Let's see.
Yep.
Anything else you wanted to let us know about the program?
Just, you know what I've already stated, that it's a fantastic program. It's designed to help citizens become more informed about their community. I think it's invaluable if you're interested in the political process or looking for a greater understanding of local politics. It's hard to figure out what is fact out there these days. And having the opportunity to discuss politics with the decision makers and the people that are making things happen in the community is such a valuable tool when you're trying to decipher truth from error when scrolling. I think that if you are going to become politically active or you have an interest in this, meeting the people and learning how the system works makes you not only an asset to Heber City, but it just makes you, you're empowered. You know, you become a citizen that's able to effectively move the needle, make a change, because you understand the system and how it works. So for anybody that is interested in politics, I think it's a great opportunity.
Okay, Ryan, again, people can learn more at envisionheber.com/leadership. Thanks for your time this morning.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye.
That's Heber City Public Information Officer Ryan Bunnell. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. On the phone with an update from the Park City Summit County Arts Council, I have Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder. Good morning, Jocelyn.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start with tomorrow, the gallery stroll.
Yeah, so as many people will know, there is a monthly gallery stroll in Park City and beyond. And so on Friday, July 31st from 6 to 9 p.m., there is a really cool themed gallery stroll this month. It's a live art theme, so the association does a really good job of mixing up gallery strolls each month, periodically adding a theme, whether it's music or they did a chocolate tasting in February. In July, they are doing a live art theme, so people can go and check out these galleries, and you'll see live painting and art demonstrations, maybe even some art talks hosted by participating galleries. The Arts Council is a participant. We have our local artist collective, Create PC, over on 1500 Current Boulevard, participating. And we'll be hosting our open studios on the second floor of Create PC. We have 10 artist studios, so you can go check that out. So it's a great way to kind of immersed in the local arts and culture scene. I hope it's going to be beautiful out. And if you're interested in the event, you can visit parkcitygalleryassociation.com for more info.
Okay. Also, next week at the Summit County Fairs in Colville, it's the annual art show. Tell us about this.
Yes. So this is a longstanding art show that takes place at the Summit County Fair out in the Colville County Fairgrounds. And this is a really fun show. It takes place August 6th, 7th, and 8th out at the Ledges Event Center in Colville. And anyone can submit artwork. We have children, from, you know, ages 4 and 5 submitting really cool drawings. We have established artists, emerging artists, senior artists, photographers, right? Any type of art is accepted. And it's an opportunity to kind of get involved with the fair scene, which is really, really fun. You can win ribbons, premiums, but really it's just fun to kind of show off your talent and connect and bring your friends to see your artwork. But so there's still time to drop off artwork. You can come on Tuesday to the Ledges Event Center, and we'll be still be accepting artwork from 4 to 7 p.m., and then we'll install the artwork, and then you can bring your friends and see it Thursday, Friday, Saturday at the fairgrounds. And so it's just, again, it's a really great way to immerse into the fair and get involved. But then also you can go to all the other activities, the 4-H show and the rodeo, the livestock competitions. It's really, really fun. So again, we encourage just anyone to get involved and submit your artwork.
Yeah, and I know that the county council actually chooses an art piece to purchase at the
there's really cool opportunities. So one of the ways that the Summit County Public Art Board acquires artwork for the Colville Courthouse is through this fair show, and they've been doing this for years. But Summit County Council will come to the show, and they select one youth artwork and one adult artwork for purchase, and they give purchase awards. So adults can win $500 if they are selected, and then the county will acquire that artwork and display it permanently out at the Colville Courthouse. And also kids are involved in this. Kids can win up to $250 if they are selected for the purchase award. And again, their artwork will be on permanent display, whether it's the Colville Courthouse, or I think last year, one of the pieces that was selected was put at the Camas Library. So you don't just win ribbons. You actually could win, you know, some real money there. So it's really fun and a great way to get involved.
All right. Let's see. You are looking for artists for a great event. It's the Monster Drawing Rally. Tell me about that.
Yes, it is. So we have the Monster Drawing Rally coming up September 19th. I don't know if you can tell, Leslie, but summer is jam-packed with arts and culture. So much going on. So we have an annual event that we do in collaboration with the Kimball Arts Center called the Monster Drawing Rally. For those of you who aren't familiar, it's a live drawing event. It's good chaos is how I describe it. And we have many artists, usually upwards of 20 or 30 local artists, drawing live. So people who come to the event can really spy on the process, but they only have 50 minutes to complete that artwork. We do three rounds of that, and then that artwork is then put up for live auction for $50, right? So we level the playing field. And in the end, it's a fundraiser for the Arts Council and for the Kimball Arts Center. It's a really fun way for artists to contribute their skills, to give back to, you know, arts organizations that support them. But it's also a great way to connect with collectors, and then participants can come and collect amazing original artwork for a very, very low price, considering how expensive original artwork usually is. So anyways, it's a really fun event. It's on September 19th, and right now we have a call for artists out. So if this sounds like a fun event to you, if you're an emerging or an established artist who loves the Kimball Arts Center or loves the Arts Council, this is a great way for you to get involved. And we're asking people to apply by August 20th so that we can communicate all the details to you and know that we have a really great slate of artists to participate. And so if you're interested, we have an application live, and you can find it on either the Kimball Arts Center's website at kimballartscenter.org or the Arts Council's website at pcsdarts.org. So we just encourage local and regional artists to apply.
Yeah. Do you have a difficult time finding artists? Only because it's a very stressful situation. I mean, it's fun, but at the same time, it's got to perform, right?
Well, a little bit, yeah. But we have artists that have been doing this. Let's see. When did we do the first Monster Drawing Rally? Maybe back in 2017, is that right? Anyways, we've been doing it for years and artists love it. It does get them a little out of their comfort zone. But I think, you know, what's nice about it, there's a lot of camaraderie. You know, you're sitting there with 20 to 30 other artists who are like, whoa, this is a little crazy. And, you know, many of our artists are introverts and love their alone time and their artistic practice. But in the end, you know, a lot of our practicing artists are also looking at, you know, networking and meeting new collectors. And in the end, connection and being in community with other artists is so much fun. So if you're right, Leslie, it might be a little out of people's comfort zone, but it's a great way to kind of push yourself. And in the end, we have artists apply year after year who love it, and new artists who are interested year after year. So again, if you're a local visual artist, or even regionally, we've had people from Wasatch County or Salt Lake apply, and we always accept them because, well, you know, it's fun to meet those artists. So we encourage you to get involved.
All right. And a great way to spend an afternoon is the Arts on the Trail. You've got tickets on sale now for this?
Yes. So this is Art on the Trails is an annual event that the Arts Council hosts. And this year it's on Saturday, August 22nd from 2 to 6 p.m. And this is in partnership with Basin Recreation, who manages McLeod Creek Trail, where it takes place. And it actually starts at the Copper Moose Farm Stand. So we're really grateful for their partnership as well. And it's a unique event. It brings pop-up creative performances on the trail. And it's about a mile and a half round trip. It's ADA accessible. There is no incline. And that's intentional. We want all ability levels to be able to participate in this. And we pepper the entire trail with live performances and visual art. And the intention is to really create an immersive, artful experience for people to enjoy. You know, when I think about the reasons I moved to Park City, it was absolutely to connect with nature and recreation and sport, hiking, right? But I also love arts and culture, and I believe many people in our community do. And so when we curated this event back in 2018, we kind of experimented with the concept. And we found that people really love that intersection between immersing in nature and getting outside, going for a lovely walk, and then also happening upon a really unique performance. Every year we have new performances, and our programs and accessibility manager, Emma Brake, does a fantastic job of curating this experience. This year we have a small group from the Riley Woodbury Dance Academy doing pop-up dance performances along the trail. We have Morgan Snow from Triggers and Slips. We have an Indigenous dance group, Culture Fire Events, who will be doing some traditional dances. Also really important to make sure that we're grounded and making sure that we're recognizing Indigenous lands. And then we have some visual art installations. We have local artist Garth Franklin, from Franklin Woodworking, plus a special installation from our interns. So it should be a really great event.
Okay. Again, people can get more by going online to your website, Summit County Park City Arts Council.org. We've got Kimball Arts Festival folks coming in to talk about Arts Festival next weekend, so I'll leave that topic to them. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I guess first with Art in the Trails, I caught something in my throat. Tickets are $25. Kids 12 and under are free. Again, you can find out more information about that event at pctsdarts.org. And then I can't reiterate this enough. Summertime is chock full of arts and culture events and experiences. Mountain Town Music is doing cool stuff. Park City Performing Arts, Egyptian Theater, Park City Film. So you can actually find all arts and culture events on our website at our cultural event calendar. Again, pctsdarts.org. And we just hope people get involved and take advantage of the beautiful summer season, all the arts that are offered.
Okay. Jocelyn, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jocelyn Scudder is the executive director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. This is KPCW Park City. Well, with a highway plan for part of Wasatch County's North Fields, local leaders are now revisiting an agreement to keep the remaining farmland undeveloped. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on that.
Locals often call the North Fields the crown jewel of the Heber Valley, and since 2019, Wasatch County and Heber City have had an agreement to keep the beloved farmland undeveloped. Now that the Utah Department of Transportation plans to build a highway through portions of the North Fields, the two governments are working to strengthen that agreement to protect the rest of the land. County Manager Dustin Graybaugh explained the proposed changes at a meeting July 15th.
The entities mutually agree that the North Fields will not be included in Heber City's annexation boundary and that Wasatch County will only zone this area to promote rural agricultural residences.
County Council Member Mark Nelson said he worried about further delay in the bypass, since any changes to the route require extra study by UDOT. But Councilmember Luke Searle said he thinks there's a way to balance conservation with UDOT's plans.
It's better late than ever kind of situation, my opinion, to start to find out how we can actually engage and work together to solve this particular problem without trying to stop a bypass.
Leaders from both entities will meet again to discuss the terms of the proposed agreement. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.